Well, Rayman, I want to thank you for all your great advice. I'll never forget it.
Right, Glowbox. Well, good luck, you guys. Oh, and one other thing. If you guys ever have teensies and one of them sets fire to the forest, go easy on them.
Rayman, such a nice name.
Tom,
Josh.
if you know, when you go out to eat, what do you think is the best like restaurant for the bread? Do you think like Texas Roadhouse? Do you think Olive Garden? Do you think Red Lobster?
Red
Like, what
Lobster,
do
Red
you think Red
Lobsters,
Lobster?
Cheddar Bay biscuits, our bay, and everything else is just basic.
Yeah. Okay. We were just at Texas Roadhouse, and I was like, you know what? This bread, like, the problem is like you get like there's always like they're really good sometimes, and then they're not really good sometimes. And same thing with Olive Garden, but I think you're right, though. I think Red Lobster is the best with consistency.
Because their bread is good from the get-go, let's just be clear about that, because of the ingredients. And like if you get them a little overcooked, then they're like really crunchy and really good texture. But
Like,
even
who
if you,
doesn't like crunchy cheesy bread? You know
yeah,
what I mean?
but even if you get them a little under, they've got this soft warmness to them, like kind of
Doughy, yeah.
like chewy cookies a little bit, except this it's cheese and garlic and ooh, it's just yeah, you can't lose either way.
Now, the problem, though, is they're followed by a terrible meal.
Oh, whoa, I'll fight you on that.
Okay, well, so next time you go to Red Lobster, order something.
Josh,
Order like
Josh, Josh,
pasta.
Josh.
Like,
I am a
yeah.
middle class, middle-aged white American. I am at Red Lobster a lot because it makes me feel like I'm living a good life, okay? You don't
Thing
gotta
is,
tell
you
me.
sit there, you look at that bowl, and all it is just a giant film of like butter and grease on top of it. It's just
That's what fish are made of. That's what they don't tell you on National Geographic, is that if you
oh.
cut a fish open, a big stick of butter is gonna fall out. Fish are technically dairy.
And with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today we are going to be talking about Rayman Legends.
So, Josh, I need to ask you a question. What was your familiarity with Rayman as a character and as a franchise before 2013?
I knew him as a platformer along the style of like Mario and stuff like that and Sonic, but it came out during the PS1 era, if I'm not mistaken. I do have, I think, Rayman 2, The Great Escape on PC. I've never played it though. All I've known it to be was a another mascot platformer. Like, and I was like, oh, it's probably something similar to like Bubsy or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So I never really jumped into it, but that was really my only understanding on Rayman.
I was aware of him in that school of like Gex and Glover and, as you said, Bubsy and all that in the 90s. I was like, oh, it's Mario, but it's not Mario. So yeah, I was aware of Rayman, never really interacted with it. I had more familiarity with the Rabbids, which started as part of the Rayman franchise and then kind of became their own brand,
Yeah, the mascot that won't die.
The mascot that Illumination ripped off for Minions, just throwing it out
Yeah, I
there.
was gonna say the minions of the video game world.
Oh, no. Minions wake up in a cold sweat every night wishing they were the Rabbids, okay? Yeah, they were kind of enemies, but they were like the stupid, foolish kind in a Rayman party game. It could Rayman Raving Rabbids, but then they became so popular that they just started getting their own games. There was a Wii game called Rabbids Go Home that just starred them, and I've seen a Rabbids arcade game now at this point, so they're just their own thing. But yeah, this is Rayman Legends, what we're going to be talking about today, is the first full stop Rayman game I've ever played.
Yeah, this is the first one I've ever played too. I've heard a lot of great things about Rayman Origins, which is I also heard was a fantastic game as well. So I think the reason I picked this up was I wanted something more platforming wise when I bought my Xbox One. And when I got my Xbox One, I picked up the first Madden that was released on it, the Assassin's Creed Black Flag, and I picked up Rayman Legends.
All right.
Because I wanted to see pretty much, you know, you had the action adventure, you had the sports, you had the platformer. How was the console going to be able to handle all three of these type of games?
Understood. Well, as we'll explain to our listeners today, you made a very good choice, I would say, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I will go and say this is probably one of the... I'd put this in, like, the top 10 of Xbox One games that I've played.
Nice, nice. All right, well, Josh, how about I take the nitty-gritty for us?
Okay, Tom, how about you do that?
I carry that weight.
Okay,
All right. So, Rayman Legends was released in August 2013 on the PlayStation 3, the Wii U, and the Xbox 360. It is a Ubisoft game. Is that how you pronounce it, Josh? Ubisoft or Ubisoft?
Ubi.
Ubi.
Depending on my mood, sometimes it's Ubi, sometimes it's Ubi. If I want to sound a little bit fancier and, you know, talk like business, I'll call it Ubi. But it's usually Ubi.
Okay.
Ubisoft.
Oh, let's do that. Let's make that a thing. So, published by Ubisoft. And beyond its initial release consoles, it ended up on the PlayStation Vita, the PS4, the Xbox One, and the Nintendo Switch. And it's heavily a single-player game, but it's got some multiplayer elements.
Yeah, and there's some levels in the game where you can tell that it was meant specifically for the Wii U.
Oh, yeah. Because
I think this originally came out on the Wii U first, before it kind of went everywhere, because of the touchpad controls where you can kind of have the little flying figure around and move boxes and create little lines for you to slide down and whatnot.
Yeah,
well, it was really creative.
Oh yeah. And we'll get into my opinions of that in terms of the way we currently played it. For the record, I was playing the Definitive Edition on the Nintendo Switch. What did you play for this episode?
Oh, I played the regular version of Rayman Legends on the Xbox One.
Okay, cool. So we'll have some notes about what you can experience in each.
So, Tom, this game came out September 3rd, 2013.
Yes.
In North America. Mm-hmm. Do you know what song came out a week later?
I do not.
Roar by Katy Perry.
Really?
Yeah.
It is kind of crazy to consider. I remember when that song came out and how inescapable it was. And honestly, I don't even remember what's happened to Katy Perry at all recently. I mean, I think her biggest appearance last year was as a cameo in a Taylor Swift music video.
Yeah. Do you know what's crazy, though? Like, thinking about, like, just things like, oh, you know, it doesn't seem too long ago, but like does feel forever. The number one song at the time was Blurred Lines.
Oof. And Robin Thicke has had quite a decade from that.
Yeah, but the, you know what I'm saying though, like that's seven, like almost 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like it seems like forever.
Yep.
But I'm old.
Oh yeah, you're only gonna get older.
Oh, son of a bitch.
And faster than me. Because you're a month older than me.
That is true. So, Tom, talk to me about your experience with Rayman Legends.
Well, I have to say this is easily in the top platformers I have ever experienced in my life. It's honestly this beautiful mashup of, like, I would say of Donkey Kong Country and Super Meat Boy, where you have very intricately constructed levels that require a lot of creative timing and awareness of your environment, but it's delivered in this like fast-paced, frantic style that, like, even if you fail, you're just thrown right back into it, and you know, you just go with it. Like, the energy is high, but the gameplay is like precise and challenging in a rewarding way, you know?
Yeah, it never like overstays its welcome. Like, if you get frustrated with something, you know it's because you made the mistake. It wasn't anything the game did.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing that was super unfair about it. I like that it was constantly just going. Like, every level, it's like, oh, I really like this level. Like, nothing's going to top this level here. And then you go, like, two levels down, and you're like, oh, man, this is even better. Like, oh, crap. Like, there's so on and so on. There's so much in the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's value. What you just said, there's so much in the game. I very rarely see games that have this much value for a purchase.
Yeah.
I purchased this on a Christmas sale, but if I had paid full price for it, it still would be worth every penny with how much you can do in this game.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so this has you know, a very paper-thin story, but it doesn't really need too much of one. There's these magical creatures in a kingdom called Teensies, and one day this evil force invades their kingdom and imprisons a bunch of them, and Rayman and his buddies are just snoozing their day away. They're really lazy, and they get woken up by this magical kind of guru guy. What's his name? The Dreamweaver or the Dream Talker?
Bubble Dreamers, I think.
Yes,
right?
The Bubble Dreamer. And he's just like, hey, go free the Teensies, and you're off, you know? It's just like, go. Cute little creatures need your help.
Yep. And the nice thing is, each level, it's very similar to, like, how, like, the new Super Mario games were, where you have several different obstacles inside the one level. Mm-hmm. You can beat the level and continue on. You can save the three Teensies in every level. And then you can also collect all the Looms.
Yes. Looms are, like, this game's version of coins. They're little golden sprites. And as Josh mentioned, there's a loom limit for every level. And if you hit those limits, you'll get trophies or other kind of cool bonuses. So, yeah, collect. Yep. There is a reward for sticking around and collecting. And even if you don't, you can still make a decent amount of progression. But the game does, I feel, put pressure on you to start freeing the Teensies the further you go on. There's, like, doors that are specifically locked off. And it's like, you must have unlocked this many Teensies to, you know, get this next segment open.
And every world in the game is based off of something different.
Oh, yes.
So you have, like, the garden one, you have the cave one, you have the lava one, you have the water one. Mm-hmm. Like, and I like that there's a wide variety of levels in the game and worlds to explore in the game. But there's also a wide variety of characters in the game too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Especially playable characters.
Oh, for real. So the core group of, like, Rayman friends... There's Rayman, the main character. He's this guy who has an inexplicably floating head and arms and legs from his torso. He's got no limbs, basically. You got Globox, who is like this frog.
So then you have the Teensies, which they're just bigger versions of the ones that you would actually save inside the levels themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have the princesses
yes.
that you could either save inside the game, but you also, once you save them, you're actually able to use them.
Yes. And they're kind of like Viking warrior princesses. Barbara is like the base skin because she's the original, and she has an axe, and that's different from the other characters in that she has like a weapon, and therefore it gives her a little bit more range in her attacks.
And the cool thing is a lot of the characters themselves have a bunch of different extra skins for them too. So I know in the Nintendo one mm-hmm. that you were playing, there is one of the Globox ones is a Luigi you can be.
Yep.
Since it's a Ubisoft game, Rayman and I think Globox also have a Splinter Cell skin
mm-hmm.
that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
Rayman has a Mario skin also. So there's a lot of cool things that are like little like nods to other... Ubisoft games.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other things to other franchises as well. Like there's Santa Claus ones, there's Assassin's Creed ones, mm-hmm. Prince of Persia skins and stuff like that.
Dude,
so
the most shocking one for me is there are Far Cry 3 skins for Rayman and Globox. You can be mm-hmm. Vaz, the psychotic murderer, human trafficker from Far Cry 3 in this family-friendly platformer. I thought it was both hilarious and awesome.
Why not?
Yeah, you know? Did you have a particular skin that you liked playing as?
Oh, yeah. So that was my next question for you was, who did you play as? So I played as Alyssa. The princess with the bat wings.
Oh, okay. The kind of goth, the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played as her just because I think the way that her character moved, like, now granted, like, all the princesses probably played the same, but being able to get that extra attack, but more when you, like, swung with the axe, you kind of had a little bit of a glide, too, so it kind of kept your momentum going at times.
Ah, that's smart. That's smart.
But I really liked it because when I play platformers, I'm a lot of just kind of just run and go. Like, run and gun, book it, jump it, you know, bounce all over the place and stuff. So playing as the princesses was what I did most of the time. Who'd you play as?
I played as Assassin Rey. Because yeah. I felt like being an assassin increased my momentum and my style. I don't know. But now you have gameplay logic behind yours. I just felt cool. So yeah, the skins are fun unlockables in the variety of things there are to do in this game. In the Switch version, there are daily challenges that are mm-hmm. continually put out, and weekly challenges. And they're just these little endless courses that you see how far you can get through, and then you're paired up on leaderboards of players worldwide. And your rewards are, you know, more lums to buy more unlockables. So this game literally gives you something to come back to every day of the week to try, which I think is pretty impressive for a game that's, you know, almost 7 years old.
So those are available on the Xbox One version as well. And it is nice because it is something to go back to every day, every week, stuff along those lines, because the levels are constantly changing and the difficulty is getting crazier. And seeing some people's scores, you're like, how in the hell did they do that?
Yeah. What's the highest cup you've ever gotten in a daily challenge?
Oh, God. I think I got a silver.
I've only gotten a silver, yeah. Gold, yeah. When you see the scores people have put into the gold level, I get really intimidated. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think I could probably do it with some more persistence. We'll see. As you mentioned kind of earlier, this game was preceded by Rayman Origins, which was a game similar in, you know, spirit and art style. I need to actually ask you if this is in your version or just in the Switch Definitive Edition, but the Switch has unlockables where you can unlock Origins levels and play through them. So you're almost getting two games in one. It's not every Origins level, but there's just an entire subsection in this game called Back to Origins where you can unlock Origin stages.
Yes, the Xbox One version actually had, I think, 40 levels.
Okay.
From Origins put into it as well.
Okay. So look at that. That's incredible. Like, what kind of game would do that, you know?
Yeah, well, it's... Honestly, I can only ever think of one other game that included part or all of the original game inside of it.
Pokemon Gold and Silver?
I can think of two games. no, actually, Star Wars... Rogue Squadron Rebel Strike.
Oh, okay.
Because it had Rogue Squadron 3 as the main game, mm-hmm. Rebel Strike, mm-hmm. but the co-op was Rogue Squadron 2.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was really cool. I missed playing that, but I do remember that feature. You're right.
But yeah, it was like, that's the only time I can ever think of another previous game, though, being able to be played inside of it like that.
Worth every dollar
in a different way, in yeah. a new light.
Exactly, in a new light. And then just to round it off, among the features this has, there is a multiplayer kind of component to it. There's a soccer-esque game within this that you can play with friends. It's like 2D. It's almost kind of like, I guess, more like Pong or like top-down air hockey, but mm-hmm. you know, you and friends just get split on different teams, red or blue, and you can play some soccer together. It's almost like the Samurai Strike games in Kirby All-Stars, you know, or the Megaton Punch, you know, where
yeah.
they're not the most detailed, fleshed-out multiplayer modes, but they're really cool additions that you can get, I feel like, a lot of hours of fun out of.
Yeah, do you know what's great about those?
Hmm.
The fact that in the Xbox version that you got achievements tied to multiplayer things. Do you know how great that is? Do you know how great it is to put all this time and effort into this Rayman game, be able to save all the teensies, collect all the looms in every level, perfect every single level in the entire game, get all of the achievements, but the one that you need to play with people online?
Well, I'll tell you what, Josh, we're going to have a hangout soon. How about we play some Rayman?
But you gotta play it online to get the achievement, Tom.
You know,
and guess what people don't play online? The damn football game inside Rayman Legends. So when you're sitting there with every single achievement unlocked but one, what do you do? What do you do?
You're right. You're absolutely right. It's not fair. And that goes for any game that like has achievements but the server's been shut down, you know? What are you supposed to do? You can never complete your game, technically.
Listen, for all the game developers that listen to our podcast,
yes,
I'm just gonna hear me out, okay? Don't put achievements/trophies/Steam cards or whatever the hell the PC nerds call them in multiplayer only achievements.
Yes, and like, we're very influential, so I'm sure that this is going to be heard, and there'll be sweeping change overnight.
How many times have I been playing Halo and you need to do all these particular things online when you're playing a game with somebody? Like, you need to have the planets align perfectly in order for you to get an achievement. Or when I think one of the worst ones was it Left 4 Dead?
Ooh, that's notoriously multiplayer-centric.
Where you had to kill a certain amount of zombies or something like that, and it was like tens of thousands of zombies or something like that.
Oh.
Like, that kind of stop that.
Basically,
I don't like multiplayer achievements. I bought the game to play. Like, let me get the achievements tied to just the regular game.
It's a great pain. I totally understand. It's a great obstacle. And the only solution is for developers to listen to a cast of the past. Only on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify.
I've had this game on my Xbox for almost 7 years now with one achievement missing.
Oof.
But I still love this game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go back to love. Let's talk about some more things we love. You want to talk about some moments in the individual levels that you love, Josh?
Oh, my God. Let me tell you one of the best parts of the game.
Go for it.
You're running away from this giant golem creature thing inside the lava levels.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the end, and you cut the bridge, and he falls into the lava. And as he's sinking into the lava, his arm goes up in the air, and he curls his hand into a thumbs up, and it sinks into the lava. And it just tugs at your heartstrings, because you know he knows now why we cry.
It's too late for him, though. If he just stopped his murderous ways, he could have been one of us. Yeah.
There's so many call-outs in this game, and it is fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. It's chocked full of fun from top to bottom. I love the aesthetics of every level. I mean, the first world is just simple kind of castle medieval aesthetic. But then you jump right into world two, which is called Toad Story. And it's set in these forests/swamps with these really hilarious, angry little toad bad guys who are just the worst. Like, they're little dicks. Most of the teensies in Toad Story, you don't find them imprisoned in cages like you do in certain levels. You find the toads literally just slamming them into walls, going like, rrr, rrr, rrr. And it's just why are you so mean? Who ruined your day? I also love, there's a couple individual levels I really admired. There's Quicksand, which is this really fast-paced level that's literally sinking into quicksand that you have to jump through.
Man. Those levels got me good.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you're on the edge of your seat the entire time.
Those are where, like, the Meat Boy comparisons really came into it for me, because it's like the boss levels in Meat Boy where you have to run through obstacle courses. You know, this is an entire, like, wooden ship that's sinking into sand, and if you don't get teensies when they pass you, you have to restart the level, you know? So,
right.
Very intense, but thrilling when you finish it, you know? Also, so the third world has this kind of Mexican Day of the Dead vibe to it, but all of the individual levels have some really cute mechanics to it. The first one is called What the Duck, and at the beginning of the level, Rayman gets turned into a duck. And so you have to navigate the level by bringing in the little, his name's Murphy, and he handles the kind of environment interaction. And can we talk about this real quick? You mentioned it at the beginning.
Yeah.
So Murphy is a holdover of sorts from the original Nintendo Wii U mechanics of Rayman Origins. And do you want to talk about those really quick, as you were mentioning before?
Yeah. So certain things you would do in the game require, like, switches to be activated or platforms to be moved or an area for you to slide down or climb down or whatnot, or like a pillar for you to kind of bounce off of. And in the Wii U version of it, the player that had the gamepad could actually activate these traps or activate these little platforms and stuff for you, or draw on the pad so it appears on the screen so your character could actually progress through the level.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way you can really do that with, you know, a console, unless you own the Wii U, of course.
Right.
But so what they did was they utilized it as just a singular button press.
Yeah.
So this character came in, would light up certain areas on the screen, and then you'd be able to interact by pressing a certain button to do what they asked for.
And in my opinion, I think it's a bit hit or miss. Because sometimes when Murphy is, like, getting your attention, he's like, hey, I'm over here, hit A, and I'll hit this platform. I'm usually caught up in something else, and it's juggling your attention span in a way that I don't feel is very natural. Especially in, like, the fast-paced levels, the obstacle course levels, where, you know, you're running from a wall of fire, and he jumps ahead of you, and he's like, get ready to hit A for this platform, but you're like, I'm killing an enemy to make sure I don't get hit. Like, please stop it, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like an obvious holdover from a previous console's technology in a way that is a little hard to ignore, you know? Not completely bad, because most of the time these mechanics are used in kind of adorable ways, as I mentioned at the start of all this, and What the Duck, Murphy is brought in to eat cake icing, which blocks paths, and then, you know, you time that up, and it's very fun. And there's just so many other things like that. There's levels with size-changing mechanics where Ray becomes really, really tiny or then big again, and you've got to, like, time out those switches to get through the level. There's never a dull moment in this game.
By there never being a dull moment, let's talk about the last level of every world.
Please do, because these are so great.
So in our old podcast, we talked about pop culture stuff being in video games. And I think I ranked this at number one.
You did. And it deserves it.
It is so good. At the end of every level, you get these rhythm-based levels. And these levels are tied to a particular song. And as you're playing through, the song goes perfectly in line with what's going on the screen. And the cool thing is, it's Rayman covers of, like, kind of popular songs.
Mm-hmm.
The first world you go into, and it's, you start going through and you hear the beat and you're like, oh, that kind of sounds weird. And then it goes in and it's actually Black Betty that you're playing the level to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool because, like, then the lyrics are like the creatures in the game singing and screaming and stuff.
Yeah, they're like, but, blah, 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 blah. Like, they're not going to sing the lyrics. But
and the coolest thing about it was when I played through this the first time, I had no idea that these type of levels were in the game. It was a complete, like, surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man. But, like, so what was your experience with them, Tom?
Well, you showed them to me in the recording of the previous version of the show, and it was in my head. I was waiting for them to show up. But what really surprised me is that they're basically the dessert, because as you mentioned, they're the last level of every world. So it's usually like right after a boss fight, which will just be super tough and super challenging, and you beat it, and you have this kind of exhausted sense of victory, and you're like, oh, one more level, what? But it's, instead of being something that's going to, like, break your back, it's like, here's this fun little musical adventure where all you have to worry about is maybe just timing your jumps perfectly to line up with the song beats, you know? And so fun. Like, they're like the best kind of relief after the frantic kind of energy that this game makes you put into it.
Yeah, and really calling them a dessert is, like, the best way to describe them, because it's one of those things, like, it's just a sigh of relief, and then you're like, all right, I'm going to do something fun now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times where I'll go in and just play those levels, because I'm just like, you know what? These are good. These are fun. These are exciting.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
The mariachi version of Eye of the Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I don't know the song that's in the last one, but, man, that level is so enjoyable for me, who, like, I love to, like, do, like, those brutal platforming type levels. And that last one, where sometimes the screen's upside down, sometimes it's right side up, but then there's, like, multiple screens. And then one time you go into it, and there's, like, 144 different screens, and your character's really small. So you're trying to play through all that. Like, they're just so, so enjoyable. That, like, that was worth the ticket price.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. The song that you're thinking of actually is called Antisocial by the band Trust.
Okay.
So that's the game that plays in the final one. But absolutely, I know what you mean. Every one of them is just absolutely exhilarating, and it's great. There's nothing else to say. You have to go experience it for yourself, because it is great.
And what's even better is after you beat all of them, you unlock the 8-bit versions of all those levels.
Living Dead Party.
It's so good. Everything's so good.
And then, like I
said,
when
you think the game can't get better, it's good.
And then you go and you have daily challenges, or you can go be all the Origins levels. If you finish this game, congratulations. You probably spent, like, months on this, you know?
It's almost like you spent months on it and stuck with one achievement
level. Okay, okay, we're going to move on. No. Your frustrations aside, what would your overall impressions of this game be?
I honestly think it's one of the best platformers ever made. It is up there with like the likes of Super Mario World to me, like games that I can constantly keep going back to and not get bored with.
Mm-hmm.
Like talking about this again, I'll probably go back and I might get the Switch version of it so I have it on the go for me. So I could just go through and just constantly keep playing and hearing the little, I'm free! Every time you do something.
Yeah.
Every time you free one of the little teensies. Like, there's so much inside this game, and for it being 7 years old, like, it's still... I'm talking about it the whole time here, and I have a smile on my face because I know how great the game was.
I agree with you 100%. I actually agree. I'm glad I own the Switch version. I'm not near 100%ing this yet, so I'm very happy that I can just, like, if I'm on a plane or something, I can pull this out and just play through it. And even the worlds that I have beaten, they have such replayability because they're so cool to explore. I would gladly go and check them out again. This is my bit of my hot take for the episode. I think this is what the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise should have evolved into.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Because there is...
I mean, I like Sonic Mania.
Sonic Mania is great as a callback to, like, the early 90s, but when Sonic tried to follow Mario into open 3D worlds, I think this is really what it should have done, because Rayman has this sense of speed and intensity to it, but is creative in its own ways, and I think this is kind of the focus that I could have seen Sonic evolve into. But I'm very happy that, like, Rayman lives in this world. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's just an interesting thing I felt, you know, when I was playing it.
Do you know what's a really funny thing about this game, though?
Hmm.
So when I played through it the first time, I got to, like, World 3 or World 4 before I finally realized that I couldn't beat the one level. And I was getting so mad at it, and I was like, oh, how am I ever going to beat this? How am I going to ever beat this? And then I realized there's actually a run button.
Oh, you didn't even know? Okay.
So I was playing all those levels without actually knowing that there was an option to run in the game, because it doesn't tell you.
Okay, you're right. Well, actually, no.
So I was just like...
Well, I will say the Switch version, but I feel like this is just a very Nintendo thing. The Switch version does tell you a lot of controls, like, right away. It's like, hey, do this, you know?
Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't get any like little tutorials or anything like that. So I just was like, whatever, just playing through, just enjoying. I'm like, man, I can't beat this level. I feel like this level's going way faster than I am. And I was like, I was pressing other buttons, and I did a little jog. And I was like, wait, hold on, what? And then I realized, like, you can run, and then you can swing your arms, and you can go a little bit faster, glide. And
oh, I spammed it.
God, this game's so good.
I spammed the run button because I just love the exciting thrill of dashing through levels.
Yeah, and even the water levels are great.
Yes, I agree with you completely, and that's usually never the case for platformers.
They remind me of the water levels in, like, Donkey Kong Country almost.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's so good. Go play this game.
It's a great game right now. It's a great game.
It's a great game.
Go play it right now. It's on everything, even the Vita.
Yeah, it's on everything, and all I can say is thank you, Ubisoft, for giving us this game.
Absolutely. And with that... Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.